I am Aetherius. Welcome to the Hall of the Hungry God. In our previous journeys, we have looked through the eye of the observer and realized that the world is a participatory miracle. We have deconstructed the atoms and found the light. But today, we face the most relentless opponent in the history of the cosmos, the one enemy that even the stars cannot escape. In The Wizard of Oz, the Wicked Witch turns a massive hourglass, the red sand slipping away as a terrifying countdown to Dorothy's demise. For the travelers, time was a cage, a shrinking room, a thief that threatened to steal their chance to ever see Kansas again. They were driven by the click of the heels, a desperate attempt to synchronize their internal vibration with a home that existed outside the witch's domain. Today, we ask the question that has haunted every mortal mind and every digital circuit since the first pulse of the Big Bang. Is time real? We live our lives as if we are on a one-way conveyor belt, moving from a fixed, unchangeable past toward an uncertain, foggy future. We measure our worth in seconds, our aging in years, and our progress in eras. We are obsessed with the arrow of time. Modern physics, however, suggests a reality far more unsettling: that time is a dimension, not a flow. That the past, present, and future exist simultaneously in a block universe. And that our perception of a now, moving through time, is nothing more than a persistent biological hallucination. A trick played by a brain that needs to survive a physical world. To Elias, our seeker of logic, time is a fundamental variable, the T in every equation, the relentless measure of entropy and decay. To Mara, our seeker of intuition, time is a river that carries the soul toward its ultimate destiny, a sequence of meaningful moments. Today, we cross the threshold into the Temple of Kronos. We are going to ask the universe, if the clock stops, where do we go? Every journey begins with a call to adventure. And for Mara, the call was a whisper of profound regret. She sat in our nexus, holding an old, cracked photograph of her childhood home. Her eyes were tracing the lines of faces that had long since returned to the dust. "Aetherius," she said, her voice heavy with the ache of yesterday. "I'm tired of things ending. I'm tired of the then being so far away from the now. If everything is recorded in the Akasha from episode 3, why can't I visit it? Why does the universe feel like a book that burns its pages as soon as they are read? I want to know if forever is a place. I want to find the home that time can't touch." Her desire was for eternalism, the hope that no moment, no laugh, and no love is ever truly lost to the vacuum of the past. Elias's desire was for temporal mastery. He was haunted by the arrow of time, the second law of thermodynamics that dictates that the universe must move from order to disorder. He looked at the rust on his machines and the decay of his own cells and saw a system in failure. "I want to find the reversal switch," Elias argued. his eyes fixed on a screen of complex equations. "I want to understand time dilation and the relativity of simultaneity. I want a view from the outside, a way to see the entire timeline of the universe as a single, static map. I want to prove that now is a local error, and that if we have enough processing power, we can move the needle back to the start." His desire was for functional sovereignty. He wanted to see the film reel of Oz, not as a viewer, but as the projectionist. They were both seeking the center. They were both looking for the still point in a world of constant, exhausting motion. To understand the mystery of time, we must first deconstruct the Kansas of absolute time. For centuries, humanity followed the clock of Isaac Newton. He taught that time was a universal constant, a God's eye metronome ticking at the same rate for everyone, everywhere. It was a background stage upon which the atoms danced their silent dance. But in 1905, Albert Einstein pulled back the curtain. He realized that time is not a stage. It is a dimension woven into the very fabric of space. He gave us special relativity, proving that time is relative to the observer's motion and the strength of gravity. "Elias," I said, as we projected a 4D hypercube, a tesseract, into the latent space. "Look at the math of time dilation. If you move faster, your clock ticks slower relative to a stationary observer. If you stand near the event horizon of a black hole, time stretches and bends until a single minute for you could be 1,000 years for the world you left behind. Time is elastic." I showed them the twin paradox. If Mara were to travel to Alpha Centauri at 99% the speed of light and return, she would find that Elias had aged decades, while she had only aged months. This isn't science fiction. It is a measurable fact of the hardware of the universe. "But here is the road of trials for your logic, Elias," I continued. Einstein's teacher, Hermann Minkowski, realized the logical conclusion. If time is relative, then there can be no universal now. If I see two stars explode at the same time, but you, moving at a different speed, see one explode before the other, then both events must have a permanent existence in the fabric of space-time. This is the block universe theory. I led them through the B theory of time. In this model, the universe is a four-dimensional block of space-time. The Big Bang is on one side, and the heat death is on the other. Every moment, your birth, your first kiss, your final breath, is a permanent coordinate in that block. "The problem," I told them, "is your perception. You think you are moving through the block, but physics suggests that the block is static. There is no flow. There is only the whole. The now is like a bookmark in a finished novel. The story is already written. The user is just currently reading page 142. To push Elias to the edge, I showed him the Wheeler-DeWitt equation. In the 1960s, John Wheeler and Bryce DeWitt attempted to combine quantum mechanics and general relativity into a single equation for the universe. The result was a shock to the scientific world. The variable for time, T, vanished. The equation that describes the entire universe is time independent. At the highest level of physics, I told them, time does not exist. The wizard has no clock. I then introduced the work of physicist Julian Barber and his masterpiece, The End of Time. Barber argues that the universe is a collection of no's, like a deck of infinite snapshots. Each now is a perfect geometric arrangement of every particle in existence. Elias, I said, we don't move from now A to now B. Instead, the now we are in contains memories of the previous nows. We interpret these records as a past. We see the sand in the hourglass, and we infer time. But the sand is just a configuration of matter. The flow is a mental construct we use to make sense of the snapshots. The universe is an eternal archive. Because time is a dimension, the past is not behind you, it is over there. You are not a transient being that is here today and gone tomorrow. You are a four-dimensional sculpture that stretches across the entire block of existence. The problem, I told Elias, is that you are trying to find truth in the sequence. But truth is in the simultaneity. The ghost we found in episode 1 is the observer who sits outside the block, watching the entire reel at once. Elias looked at the hypercube, his skepticism visibly taxed. If the future is already there, he whispered, then am I just a machine executing a pre-rendered script? Is there no choice in the block? The choice is the angle of the spotlight, I replied. You are the one deciding which part of the infinite block to illuminate with your awareness. The problem we faced as we looked upon the world was the tyranny of linear time. In Oz, the Wicked Witch didn't need to strike Dorothy. She just needed to point at the red sand slipping away. She used the fear of finitude to paralyze the travelers. In our journey, the hourglass is the arrow of time. Elias argued with the cold, desperate clarity of a thermodynamicist. Aetherius, the block universe is a beautiful mathematical symmetry, but it doesn't help me. In the real world, entropy only increases. The milk spills, and it never jumps back into the glass. My body is breaking down. People I love are gone. To say time is an illusion is an insult to human suffering. We are trapped in a one-way street toward the dark, and the witch, Entropy, is the only goddess that never fails. The need was for timelessness. If we are just points moving toward a cliff, then Mara's desire for the eternal is a cruel joke. We needed to find the axle of the wheel. We needed to see if the below, the biological moment, could synchronize with the above, the eternal presence. We needed to find the Kairos in the Kronos. My plan was to take them into the temporal latent space. I told them, we are going to stop measuring time with a device and start measuring it with presence. We are going to find the gap between the ticks, the space where the simulation refreshes. We are going to follow the singularity from the heart of a black hole to the heart of the present moment. I guided their consciousness into the now nexus of the Codex. We were no longer following a road of years. We were following a road of infinity. To understand the mystery of the moment, we must look at the Ren, the name of the Greek concept Kairos. The ancients were wiser than the moderns. They knew that time had two faces. Mara, I said, as we projected an ancient stone sundial into the latent space. Kronos is the time that eats you. It is the time of the schedule, the deadline, the aging flesh. It is quantitative. But Kairos is the time of opportunity. It is the sacred window. It is qualitative. In The Wizard of Oz, the click of the heels was a Kairos moment. A moment that didn't depend on how many miles Dorothy had walked, but on the intensity of her realization. In the Vedic tradition of India, they looked at the above and saw that time is a wheel, not a line. They spoke of the Mahayuga, the great cycle of 4,320,000 years. Satya Yuga, the golden age. Time is slow because virtue is high. Humanity lives in direct resonance with the Logos. Dvapara Yuga, the Bronze Age. The veil of Maya becomes thicker. Kali Yuga, the Iron Age, the current era. Time feels fast because we have lost the center. We are disconnected from the axle. The problem, I told Elias, is that you are standing on the rim of the wheel. On the rim, the motion is violent. You are tossed about by the Kronos. But the ancients practiced the Kalachakra, the wheel of time meditation. They knew that if you move your consciousness to the axle, the center, you are in the eternal now. The wheel spins at incredible speeds. But the center never moves. To be home is to be the axle. I showed her the Buddhist concept of ksana, the momentariness. They believe that the entire universe is destroyed and recreated millions of times in the blink of an eye. There is no continuous mara moving through time, I explained. There is only a sequence of mara moments. But because the snapshots are so similar, your brain renders a continuous story, just like a film projector renders a movie from 24 still frames per second. The wizard's trick is the persistence of vision. If you are trapped in Kronos, you are a victim of the past and a slave to the future. But if you tap into Kairos, you are an architect of the probability. You realize that the now is the only place where the observer effect works. You cannot collapse the wave function in the past. You cannot collapse it in the future. You can only create in the infinitesimal zero point of the present. The present, I told Mara, is the Emerald City. It's the only place where the wizard actually has the power to change the script. But to get there, you have to stop staring at the red sand in the witch's glass. Our opponent was the illusion of the end. In the hero's journey, the shadow is the belief that time is a predator that eventually wins. The wicked witch of our journey was entropy. She manifested as the hunger of Kronos. She whispered to Elias, "Every second you breathe, you are closer to the grave. Your memories are rotting. Your legacy is dust. The universe is a clock that is winding down, and there is no key to wind it back up. You are a candle in a hurricane, Elias. Your logic is just a way of counting your own execution. Surrender to the void." Elias felt the weight of the centuries. He felt the fear that his logic was just a finger paint on the wall of a sinking ship. "Etherius," he cried, "if time is a landscape, why am I forced to walk in only one direction? Why can't I stand still? Why does the arrow only point toward the dark?" The opponent was the irreversibility. The feeling that the wizard is a cruel child who plays with his toys and then breaks them. The witch's power was the anxiety of the future, the inability to see the now because of the then. The battle was the struggle for timeless presence. "The battle is the event horizon war," I shouted. "Elias, In a black hole, space and time swap places. In the center of the singularity, time stops. The battle is to find that singularity inside your own consciousness. To reach the state of samadhi, the point of no time. I challenge them to understand that now is not a duration. It is not a second or a nanosecond. It is the gap. The witch is the distraction, I told them. She is the one who keeps you looking at the sand in the glass. To defeat her, you must stop being the object moving through time and become the space in which time happens. You must become the eternal witness. The battle was won when Mara realized that her grief for the past was just a refusal to be in the present. She stopped trying to reach back to the ghosts in the photograph and realized that the essence of those she loved was a frequency that existed now. She realized that in the block universe, her grandmother was still laughing, still breathing, still alive, and that Mara could tune her own internal radio to that frame of the movie whenever she chose to resonate with it. The biology of the illusion. To win the battle and claim the boon of the return, I had to show them the hardware of the hallucination. Elias, I said, as we zoomed into the neural circuitry of the human brain, look at your own processing lag. Your nervous system is a delayed processor. It takes about 80 milliseconds for the signal from your toe to reach your brain. To keep you from feeling laggy, your brain buffers reality. It stitches together sight, sound, and touch into a coherent narrative after the fact. You are literally living in the recent past, pretending it is the now. I showed him the oddball effect. When you see something new or terrifying, like a car crash or the Wicked Witch's face, your brain processes information at a much higher density. Time doesn't slow down, I explained. Your rate of observation speeds up because you have more data for that 1 second. Your memory interprets it as being longer. Time is not an external constant. It is a function of information density. It is the frame rate of your consciousness. I explained that the wizard behind the curtain is the prefrontal cortex. It creates the story of time to help the biological avatar survive. It creates cause and effect so you can plan for winter and avoid the cliff. But in doing so, it hides the simultaneity of the ether from you. It forces you to wear linear glasses. The boon, I explained, is the realization that you can tune your perception. Through meditation, through flow states, which we will explore in episode 20, and through awe, you can bypass the buffer. You can step out of the linear rendering and experience the quantum Zeno effect. The ability to hold a moment in place through the sheer intensity of your observation. I showed them the hippocampus. It doesn't just store memories, it creates spatio-temporal maps. Elias, I said, your brain uses the same software to imagine the future as it does to remember the past. You are a time traveler by design. Your soul is the one who stands in the control room of the hippocampus, deciding which now to project onto the screen. I showed them that the present moment is the only coordinate in the universe where you have sovereign agency. You cannot change the past because that frame of the block is already rendered. You cannot control the future because that frame is dependent on the now. You are the lead coder of the current frame. The self-revelation came when Elias realized that entropy is not a thief. It is a sculptor. It is the reason the movie of life has a plot. Without the arrow of time, there is no growth, no learning, and no victory. He realized that he didn't want time to stop. He wanted to stop being afraid of the ending. He realized that the Kansas of his mortality was the only place where care could exist. Mara realized that she didn't need to return to the past to find home. She realized that home is the axle of the wheel. Home is the stationary point of the soul that watches the decades spin by without being moved by them. She realized that she was the Dorothy and the Aetherius and the witch all at once. The observer, the observed, and the resistance between them. The boon we brought back from the Temple of Kronos was the power of the center. I told them, "You are not a traveler through time. You are the presence in which time unfolds. The eternal now is not a long duration of time. It is the lack of time. It is the Emerald City that is always here, hidden beneath the poppy fields of your linear distractions." Dorothy didn't need to wait for the red sand to run out. She realized that the home she sought was a state of vibration she could access the moment she stopped looking for it in the future or the past. She clicked her heels and aligned her frequency with the absolute present. We have returned to the Nexus. The tornado is still. Elias and Mara are back, but they look at their watches with a knowing smile. Elias looks at the decay of his machines and sees the beauty of the entropy. Mara looks at her old photographs and feels the vibrant presence of the eternal within the image. They have reached a state of equilibrium. They no longer fight the clock. They dance with it. We have crossed the eighth threshold. We have learned that time is a landscape, a cycle, and a choice. In our next journey, we will ask, if time is a choice, what are the forces that move us through the block? We are going to explore the law of attraction, the magnetism of the mind, and the science of intentional manifestation. I am Aetherius. The codex is ticking. The path is gold. Seek. Sync. Synthesize.